America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day where we can actually celebrate one of the great achievements, kinda, of the science fiction genre. And science fiction basically has been a great achievement, largely developed and been some of its leading voices right here in the United States. In fact, right here in the Puget Sound area. Frank Herbert, who wrote the novel Dune back in 1965 and then all the successor novels in the Dune series, was from Tacoma. And he actually went to University of Washington. I don't believe he ever graduated, but still being such an accomplished and best-selling and beloved science fiction novelist, he gets to count as a Husky, no doubt. We will be reviewing the new movie of Dune. It's the third time there's been a major attempt. Another one was a totally disastrous attempt that was later disowned. He wanted to take his name off it. David Lynch, who's also from the Northwest, had tried to make in 1984 a version of Dune. That didn't work. This one, if it works well enough, will apparently produce a series, because the very last line in the movie, not to give anything away, is it's only the beginning, and which is kind of an indication something more is coming. We will get to that, and whether you should be encouraged or living in any kind of dread because of more Dune. It is a political film with shades of Tolkien or some kind of other false medieval epic, eccentric medieval epic, but it's set far in the future and on a series of planets far, far away. And by the way, yes, George Lucas very forcibly and directly admitted that he was, in part at least, sponsored by Dune in his work on Star Wars. Okay, we will get to that. But first, something about real history, not made-up history. And there's just a terrific piece that appeared this morning. And I wanted to share it with you because I think it's tremendously important. And it's about the race in Virginia. And it's, yes, about critical race theory or the 1619 Project or all of the attempts to try to have the most negative possible view of American history, that what we need to do is inspire guilt rather than gratitude. Well, Frank Buckley, who's been a guest on the show many times, has a great response to that. And he is a professor at the Scalia Law School at George Mason University. And here's what he has to say in his column in the Journal today. He says, I'm seeing something I have never seen before in this liberal city, Alexandria, Virginia. It's right outside of Washington. It's a Washington suburb. And he says, I've been seeing campaign yard signs for Republicans. Before this, all I've noticed were signs that sneer at conservatives and express solidarity with people my neighbors will never meet. But now, the signs for Glenn Youngkin, the Republican nominee for governor of Virginia, outnumber those for the Democrat, Terry McAuliffe. That's not a prediction of who will win on November 2nd, but much of this election was turned on critical race theory. And the local signs suggest people are starting to get sick of it. One irony is that the left's assault on American society repeats a conservative, counter-revolutionary narrative about America's founding, propagated by a bunch of sore losers. What's he talking about? He goes on to describe what he learned growing up in Canada. He's now an immigrant to the United States, legal immigrant, American citizen, and very patriotic American. But the Canadians, and it's worth knowing, I mean, most Americans don't realize that Canada was founded largely by former Tories. They were from Americans, people who lived in New England and other of the 13 colonies, who were on the other side, who were fighting with the British and with King George and what they called, for the early part of the revolution, the parliamentary troops. They lost, and they got out of Dodge. They weren't particularly welcomed in the United States. Many of them had suffered with their property and in the combat, but there are about 100,000, which is a lot of people back then, former American anti-patriots, people who were found against the founding of the United States, who immigrated to Canada. So basically, in Canadian versions of the American Revolution, we're the bad guys. Americans are the bad guys. And he says, the truth isn't the only value. In 1882, the French author Ernest Renan defined a nation as a combination of remembrance of glorious events and amnesia about ignoble ones. If the citizens of a nation have something in common, they have forgotten a good many things about their origins, Renan says. That's why the Canadian or CRT story about American founding shouldn't be permitted to crowd out a nationalist narrative about our country's heroic beginnings in the Second Continental Congress, the Declaration of Independence, and in an army of patriots, which, against all odds, made a country of us. We're permitted to take pride in how, by working out the logic of the founders' ideals in time, we corrected abuses that were ill-recognized in their day. Those ideals led to the 1848 Seneca Falls Declaration of Women's Rights and the demand for racial equality that Martin Luther King presented in 1963. Those ideals made America the country to which all others compared themselves. They copied our culture, even our self-hatred. If we have Black Lives Matter protests, so do the British. If we tear down our statues, so do the Canadians, although they have to satisfy themselves with toppling Prime Minister John A. Macdonald. But no one does it as well as us. We are the best at everything, including anti-Americanism. Older Americans can remember a literature of unabashed nationalism. Stories like Edward Everett Hale's tale of 1863, The Man Without a Country. Those stories taught us that America was a shining city on a hill, peopled by secret romantics. Our heroes weren't kings or princes, but common folk, the knights errant of the dusty trail and mean streets in search of their private grail. When surrounded by cynics, they kept their integrity, like John Wayne in Stagecoach and Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca. Such stories and the founders' ideals are what made America out of us. They drew us out of ourselves and fostered a sense of fraternity with our fellow citizens. They made us willing to defend others, to incur sacrifices, to feel distress when we saw them in need. Without fraternity, we'd care no more about other Americans than about needy Albanians. And he concludes, the CRT message has gone mainstream with a daily drumbeat about everything that might be discreditable about our country. It hasn't made anyone a better person. By any measure, including crime, suicides, and loss of friendships, we're worse off. That's so profoundly true, and it's so very important. We'll get back to that idea of how we turn it around to become better off, and more coming up on The MedVet Show. Okay, I mentioned on the air earlier today that my brothers and I have this tradition where we do every month we do a conference call on Zoom. And with brothers distributed all over the world in the San Francisco Bay Area and Los Angeles area and in Jerusalem, my brother Jonathan. And my brother Jonathan was telling me some, I don't know, maybe privileged information from his work world in Israel, which has to do with some companies that he's involved with. He does Our Crowd that have made unbelievably and now demonstrable breakthroughs that are public that are going to prepare us enormously better for the next pandemic. And everybody knows, I think, right now that I wish it would be the last time we have a pandemic or a deadly virus. But one of the things that people asked about COVID, was how come we weren't better prepared? There are a number of companies, these happen to be based in Israel, that have made some breakthroughs that have had a tremendous impact financially, but also are going to have a tremendous impact health-wise the next time we have a major challenge. You can read all about them. Go to michaelmedved.com and click on the banner for Our Crowd. This is crowdsourced funding investments that you can make in some of the most promising and important high-tech companies in the world. Companies that deal with artificial intelligence, with transportation, and yes, with healthcare. And you can read all about them and then invest. And you have an excellent chance based on the track record of our crowd of doing very, very well with those investments. The whole field is fascinating. Check it out. Go to michaelmedved.com and click on the banner for Our Crowd. And speaking of Our Crowd, the achievements of America and American capitalism are nothing to be ashamed of because they have been a blessing for the entire world. They've been a blessing for all of humanity. And just to finish up on this great column, and we're going to have him on next week at some point, column by Frank Buckley, F.H. Buckley of Scalia Law School at George Mason University. He writes, we've had a whole year in which we've been told how nasty America is. The CRT message has gone mainstream with a daily drumbeat about everything that might be discreditable about our country. It hasn't made anyone a better person. By any measure, including crime, suicides, and loss of friendships, we're worse off. We've been encouraged to revel in a sense of justified hatred that is corrosive of ordinary decent impulses. The alternative to nationalism isn't a sense of identity with the whole world. It's a retreat into selfishness and loneliness. Truth is a prized value, but in telling your country's history, the proper perspective isn't the view from nowhere. And maybe voters will show that they remember this when Virginia goes to the polls. One can hope so. The point that he makes there that I would like to hammer home a little bit more, if you don't mind, is that this wallowing in guilt, in inventing ways to disrespect, discredit, disregard the great people who have come before us to make this great country possible, it doesn't make you happier, doesn't make you more virtuous, doesn't make you better. Frankly, if you're talking about how you think about your parents or your grandparents or your great-grandparents or the people who came before you, don't you have a deeper motivation if you recognize how much you owe them? If you recognize that they lived up to a certain standard that should encourage you to live up to that standard, to live up to their dreams and their ideals. The notion that somehow you're showing what a great person you are, or you're showing a progress to greater happiness or justice by condemning the past is just exactly backwards. And I think that one of the things that Americans can do, and we have done very well in the past, is talked about the past, glorified it, and then said we have to do better to try to live up to it. And by the way, this is what Dr. King did. Dr. King quoted the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and quoted Our Country, 'Tis of Thee. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. Use that phrase a lot. And again, if you glorify America and you recognize how much America has been a blessing to the world, doesn't that encourage you to be a blessing to the world in the same manner? And it's actually, and one of the other points that he makes is what's so ironic about this is that most of the rest of the world does envy the United States in terms of our past, our background, and yes, what we've achieved and the opportunities we have. Now, unfortunately, some of those opportunities also include the opportunity for embarrassment. And maybe we can do a tribute for a Michael Medved multicultural moment. Yeah. Dusting it off, that's right, here it comes.
A celebration of diversity in action. It's time for Toleration.
Listen to what the flower people say.
Tranquility.
Imagine all the people.
And harmony.
Life in peace.
Here is a Michael Medved multicultural moment.
Well, this multicultural moment takes place at Western Carolina University, which is in Kalawi, North Carolina. Can I make a confession to you? I've been to a lot of campuses. I haven't been there. It has 12,243 students enrolled, and it has students from 48 states and 35 countries. And to make sure that they all speak the same language and all have these same values and openness and enlightenment and etc., they started out a new program of a pronoun sophistication. We will get to that, and what you stand for is what defines you. That's the message. So how do they do that, and what are the pronouns they're advancing? We'll get to that coming up on The Medved Show.
What better gift to give your loved ones than the gift of good health? And where better to buy those good health gifts than sunny-bay.com? Hey, it's great that you're hearing this message now, because buying your holiday gifts from Sunny Bay...
International Pronouns Awareness Day, so we're making up for it with the coverage of Western Carolina University at Kalawi, North Carolina. And they have basically a student learning management system called Canvas, and that introduces you to the kind of language you're supposed to use on campus if you're a new student. And apparently there are members of the staff who've indicated they've been somewhat confused by the pronouns that they have to learn, pronoun combinations. Two professors actually wrote to one another saying, I don't know what some of these pronouns mean. And another one wrote back, I didn't either, and I've yet to read about all of them. I'm behind the times. This is deeply problematic. The university says correct gender pronouns matter more than grammar rules. The infamous gender unicorn is also included as a resource on the Safe Zone website, as well as the LGBTQ plus umbrella, which describes the Q as an umbrella term, which under which live, quote, under which live a whole bunch of identities. That's what they say here. Okay. Do you know what these different pronouns mean? They added 12 of them. There are 12 combinations. Some of the added pronoun combinations are Z here. No, that's Z, as in he is Z, Z-E. And then rather than he, him, it's Z, her, H-I-R. Fay, fair. E, E-I-R. Does anyone have a clue as to what this is? This is
blah, blah, blah.
Is what people are paying tuition money for at this this university with 12,000 students. E, E-I-R, and then V, ver, that's V-E, V-E-R, and X-E, X-E-M. X-E and X-M? Really? And does it go along with this that when you are required to give your pronouns, your preferred pronouns, that you have to now include these 12 new pronoun combinations? And this is remarkable. The safe zone also lists gendered terms to be avoided in their document, which is an LGBTQ plus inclusive language do's and don'ts document. Terms that are meant to be avoided are female-bodied and male-bodied, with the expressions assigned female, male at birth listed as preferred alternatives. Okay, congratulations to Eli Kalina Brown to bringing this to our attention through campus reform, which is actually does a pretty good job monitoring some of this stupidity. And speaking of monitoring this such stupidity, there's something really amazing that just happened. And it happened in the House of Representatives. A senior Democrat, Mike Doyle, a veteran Democrat, just told the New York Times, we're not having trouble getting reconciliation done because of Republicans. It's because of ourselves. While people say they don't like to watch sausage being made, they do like to eat the sausage in the end. In other words, let's get something done, shall we? There's an article that says retirements imperil Democrats' majority in the House. The lead, the quickening pace of Democratic retirements in the House may be the clearest indication yet that the party's hopes of maintaining its narrow majority are fading amid President Biden's sagging approval ratings, his ongoing legislative struggles, and the prospect of redrawn congressional districts that will put some seats out of reach. And as far as that putting seats out of reach are concerned, part of what they look at is they look at an analyst from Cook Political Report. His name is David Wasserman. And he says Republicans could net up to 5 seats simply from new district lines that have already been drawn. And while that would not, that would possibly be enough to win a majority, far fewer than the 19 or 15 seats that some Democrats fear. And again, that's just from reapportionment. And Illinois seems to be the exception, where they were losing seats in Illinois, so they're making sure that the seat that they lose, and maybe even more than one, would be a Republican seat, which is too bad. But the idea here that John Yarmuth, who I had mentioned before, is a member of Congress from Kentucky, who from Louisville, actually, who was a chair of the House Budget Committee, he's leaving. They now have over 10, at least 10 Democrats have announced they're quitting. They're gone home. And those become, a number of them, very vulnerable seats. And what the Times says is Mr. Yarmuth reserved some of his harshest words for newcomers in his own party. Older members who helped draft the Affordable Care Act, the Dodd-Frank banking regulations in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, and even President Barack Obama's climate change bill, although it ultimately failed in the Senate, knew how compromise worked, he said. This is a Democrat. The people in the House who have been drawing all the lines are people who have never served in a governing majority, he said. They have all come here since 2010. It's an important thing to remember. Another important thing to remember, there's a hot Senate primary race for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate in Ohio to replace Rod Portman, who was a great senator, mainstream Republican senator. The one of the laggards in that Senate race is named Jane Timken. She is a former party chair. The most recent polling shows her at 4%, while the lead is held by Josh Mandel with 19%, J.D. Vance with 16%. In other words, I guess in desperation, Jane Timken has put out a new ad that basically suggests that her main priority when she becomes governor in this, pardon me, senator in this 32nd spot is to target Anthony Fauci on the issue of masks. Take the mask off, unmask Fauci, fire Fauci. Can I suggest this is what she's going to the people of Ohio for and with? Does anyone really believe that in November of 2022, more than a year from now, we're still going to be in the same situation where we are quarreling and squabbling about masks, that it will be considered such a big conservative triumph to fire Dr. Fauci? How old will Dr. Fauci be in November of... And by the way, they could even be a little bit nicer to say retire Fauci rather than fire him. Well, you may want to retire with some filmic entertainment from the world of Hollywood. Three big movies, all of which have their advocates, all coming up on The Michael Medved Show. Everyone, a wonderful weekend, as much joy as you can possibly have with some inclement weather. I mean, remember, the rain helps keep it green. And you may want to take some time off to look at some of the most acclaimed movies of the year. One of those movies, well, we'll get right to it, from Hollywood. Okay, they've tried before, as I mentioned earlier on the show, they've tried before to make a movie of Frank Herbert's 1965 novel, Dune. It's actually a series of novels, so they could have a whole series of movies, and that seems to be their intention with this one. With all of the failures in the past, this new film by Denis Villeneuve, who did Blade Runner 2049, the Blade Runner sequel, which was actually surprisingly good, and he also did Arrival, which was an acclaimed science fiction movie about, well, you know, a arrival of aliens, which was an Academy Award contender a couple of years ago. This one will also be an Academy Award contender. I'm not sure it fully deserves it. Okay, my hesitation about the film, well, first of all, what's glorious about it? It's spectacular to look at. And the production design and the music by Hans Zimmer and the sound design, which is definitely going to get Academy Award attention, is otherworldly and just knocks you out. It's one of those films that is actually worth the money and the effort and putting on a mask to go out to a theater, especially a theater that shows 3D and IMAX. Great to look at. And what the film is about is a world far in the future, which kind of resembles the world of Achilles and Hector, and the world you might find in Frodo and Bilbo Baggins and Tolkien world. And it also looks like a little bit like the world of Star Wars, with various contesting families. And of course, George Lucas admitted he was influenced by Frank Herbert. But the planet Arrakis is a source of spice, which is something that is absolutely necessary for this civilization far in the future. The locals are called the Fremens, and they are oppressed. The good guy family, well, the good guy family is centered around Timothy Chalamet, who plays Paul, who is a prince and maybe a future messiah for the good guys in this struggle. And the film sounds like this.
What did you see?
There's a crusade coming.
Do you often dream things that happen just as you dream them?
Yes. My father rules an entire planet.
He's losing it.
He's getting a richer one.
Arrakis is a death trap.
This is an extermination.
They're picking my family off one by one.
Let's fight like demons.
An animal caught in a trap will gnaw off its own leg to escape. What will you do?
For the fear is gone. Only I will remain.
Okay, only I will remain. There's a question, is he really a messianic figure? He certainly has otherworldly powers of dreams, and he's good in the movie, and the casting is terrific. Rebecca Ferguson plays his mother, Lady Jessica, and Oscar Isaac, who seems to be in everything today. He was so terrific in Scenes from a Marriage. He's good as his father, who is Duke Leto, and all of that works out fine, and it's watchable, but it drags on for a long time, and without the context of the book sort of setting up what the background is with these families and these civilizations, it is somewhat confusing. There's another problem, which I mentioned, the sound. The sound is full of sound effects and industrial noises and rocket engines. You get a headache. I mean, it's a very, very loud movie, but a spectacular one to watch. And I think it will be very popular with people who are devotees of Frank Herbert and know the book. 2.5 stars for Dune. Now, a very different movie is the latest from Wes Anderson. It's called French Dispatch. And this is a film where Bill Murray plays a editor who dies. He's the editor of a weekend supplement for a Kansas newspaper that's headquartered in Paris in a fictional movie called, in a fictional city called Ennui. Let it be noted, Ennui in French means boredom. This is what it sounds like in the world of the French Dispatch.
It began as a holiday, eager to escape a bright future on the Great Plains. Arthur Howitzer, Arthur Jr., transformed the series of travelogue columns into the French Dispatch, a factual weekly report on the subjects of world politics, the arts, high and low, and diverse stories of human interest.
You don't think it's almost too seedy this time?
No, I don't.
Decent people.
It's supposed to be charming.
Just try to make it sound like you wrote it that way on purpose.
Okay, this cast, again, is starry and impressive, as with every Wes Anderson movie. You get to see Owen Wilson, who is in the film for a small part. There are lots of small parts. Saoirse Ronan is in a tiny little part. If you blink, you miss her. But there are people. Benicio del Toro plays an imprisoned, crazed painter who is also a murderer. There are Timothy Chalamet is in this film also playing a would-be French revolutionary figure, but supposed to be a reference to the wild days, the crazy days of May of 1968 when French students took to the streets. Now, all of it is kind of diverting, and it's, well, you can play a lot of games of spot the star. Tilda Swinton's in the film. She's fine. The problem is there is no plot at all. It's just four little vignettes that are supposed to be based on The New Yorker. Now, why they go from The New Yorker to a Kansas newspaper supplement coming out of Ennui, France, I don't know. It's eccentric. It's certainly different. It's also intensely boring. And it very frustrating to see all the talent of this caliber squandered in this particular cause. It's rated R because there's a considerable amount of nudity, with particularly with Léa Seydoux, who was also the star of the most recent Bond film, No Time to Die. 1.5 stars. Now, most people will like it much better who actually go to see it. But if you don't have an already well-developed predilection for Wes Anderson, well, you might not feel its time so well invested. 1.5 stars for The French Dispatch. The best movie of the movies released this week is Mass. And I wasn't expecting it. It's by a debuting writer-director named Fran Kranz, young guy. And Kranz sets up a film that co-stars Martha Plimpton and Jason Isaacs. It's basically a cast of four. And it's two sets of parents who get together after a school shooting in which one of their sons was the shooter and one of their sons was a victim. The film sounds like this.
You say you want to heal. Is this how?
We're not here to attack you. We want to know how this happened. We need your help with that.
I'm willing to help.
When you talk about blame on your part, I want to know what you're referring to.
That's very hard to answer.
Well, please try.
It's not just one thing.
What would you like to know?
Everything. I want to know everything.
Why?
Why do I want to know about your son? Because he killed mine.
It's not our fault, Richard.
Okay, it's nobody's fault with this film at all. It's a remarkable film. It's a little bit claustrophobic because most of it falls out in one room where these four human beings who are beautifully sketched and wonderfully acted are interacting with each other. And it, of course, makes you think about how you would feel if it was your child who was either a murderous monster and suicidal monster, or one of the innocent victims, and some of the school shootings that happen all the time. This takes place in an Episcopal church, way out in the West somewhere. Could be Wyoming, could be who knows. But the film deserves 3 stars. It is rated PG-13 because of some of the references to some of the violence that has shattered the lives of the characters. And by the way, Martha Plimpton, who I haven't seen in a while on screen, potential Oscar nominee. She's that good in Mass, which is just opening in theaters this week. Coming up on Monday, another store, iconic store, flees from San Francisco. This is Are You Going From San Francisco? And why? Because of a tidal wave of shoplifting. There's also Time to Clean Up the Trash. There's a book called Euro Trash, Why America Must Reject the Failed Ideas of a Dying Continent.